This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're happy to have with us for the first time here on Make It Plain, the mayor of St. Louis, Mayor Tashara O. Jones. Mayor Jones, welcome to Make It Plain.
Good morning. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm just fine. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm doing well in St. Louis. The sun is out, the temperature's up, and everybody's outside having fun.
Well, that's great. That's great. So this is your first term as mayor. How is that? You know, sometimes these days being mayors is not all that glamorous. Mayors have to do a lot of the hard work closer to the ground, don't they?
Yes, it is. You know, the mayor of your city is definitely politics at its most local level. My dad often says that politics 9 miles away is more important to your day-to-day lifestyle than politics 900 miles away. However, given what's currently happening 900 miles away in the White House, I would say that both are very important right now.
How is Mayor Jones, what's happening at the White House affecting your city?
Well, our policy director has read all 900 pages of Project 2025 and has been actively working with our federal lobbying team and tracking some of the proposed spending freezes, the proposed eliminations of departments. And we have summarized that about $175 million of the city's budget could be at stake if everything in Project 2025 comes to fruition.
So when you say the budget, so what specific areas would that affect in St. Louis?
For example, HUD has awarded several grants last year. Those grants are frozen, so that affects our CDBG grants, our CDBGDR for disaster relief, which we had a flood in July of 2022, and that money is going to be critical to helping our residents become whole again or sell their homes and move to a different part of the city. Our Department of Labor is affected. That's our youth jobs and our youth bill programs that we used to service our youth and young people, homeless services. So HUD, we've received a couple of grants from HUD as well. One to speed up the production of affordable housing, another grant for our homeless services. We get about $15 million a year for homeless services. And half of our Department of Health is currently funded by grants from HHS. So that's just scratching the surface of the number of grants. You still haven't even figured out what this is going to mean for grant applications that we have pending on the Department of Transportation to expand public transit or upgrade our airport.
And what about Mayor Jones when it comes to the immigrant population? And I don't know, I'm happy to hear about all this from you. What is the situation in St. Louis? Are Trump's threats to immigrants also going to have a profound impact upon St. Louis?
It's already having an impact with how they have ceased funding for migrant relocation and migrant services. One of our nonprofits has had to lay off tens of workers that we're helping our refugees from Afghanistan and Ukraine resettle in St. Louis. And we opened an Office of New Americans just a couple of years ago to try to make sure that we're braiding these resources together, the community resources, so we can be a welcoming community for migrant communities who choose St. Louis as their new home.
So let me ask you this. My friend, Brandon Johnson in Chicago, is dealing with an issue. Mm-hmm. Even some people who look like you and me, who've been radicalized against immigrants and immigration, and that's a challenge. Mm-hmm. Is that happening in your city? And let me ask that question. I don't understand it, because a lot of the jobs, as we know, that we have our immigrant population doing, don't nobody else want to do, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, so what is that? How is that in St. Louis? Is there a hostility, or are people supportive of immigrants being there in St. Louis?
I would say if there is hostility, it's in the minority.
Okay.
You know, while I do hear the sentiments at times when I visit different neighborhood meetings, you know, there are some who will just outright ask me, how many illegal immigrants are in the city of St. Louis? Or I heard that you are working with the mayor of Chicago to attract more illegal immigrants to the city of St. Louis. And of course, I push back by saying, you know, first off, I'm not going to call them illegal immigrants. They are people without documented status in our country. And then I also push back and say, you know, St. Louis, or this entire country, was stolen from the people who already lived here. So, you know, I try to step back and do a little history lesson and right. saying, you know, none of us are Native Americans in this room. We all came from somewhere else.
Amen. Amen. I'm sorry I had to laugh. I'm just, somebody's imagination is like, you calling up Brandon, hey, Brandon, let's go get some illegal immigrants. I mean, who does that? Nobody.
Right. Now, are there a group of mayors who work together on this crisis? Absolutely. The mayor of Denver, for example, has been just amazing in this work. And the mayor of Chicago, the mayor of New York, you know, we all have similar offices of New Americans and they talk. But there are families arriving here. It's just that in Missouri, because we're a red state, we don't have buses, you know, being dropped off in downtown. But there are families who are making their way here, and we are positioned to welcome them and make sure that they have the resources they need to thrive. So access to jobs, housing, and anything else.
Well, and to elaborate on that point, are there businesses and enterprises in St. Louis that benefit from immigrant workers, and that without them would be tremendously affected? Is that not the case?
That is exactly the case. Missouri is an agricultural state.
Right.
And so, you know, we would be affected that way. We also have a large industry of slaughterhouses, for lack of a better term, for cows and for pigs. You know, a lot of our migrant community work in those factories. A lot of our migrant communities work in hotels.
Right.
So, you know, there are several industries that would be affected if we just shut the door to migrant communities who are choosing America as their home.
What's it like mayoring? That's a word I just made. That's a verb. Mayoring.
Mayoring. Yes, it's a verb.
What's it like mayoring a blue city as a Democrat in a red state nowadays?
It, heavy is the head that wears the crown. it's very difficult, and especially difficult, I would say, this particular session, in that our state legislature has made up its mind that they want to do a hostile takeover of our police department. Kansas City, Missouri is the only city in the country that has a state-controlled police department. St. Louis used to up until about 12 years ago. And now we have local control of our police department. And Quentin Lucas, who's the mayor of Kansas City, is a great friend and partner in this work. And he wrote a brilliant opinion piece in our local paper in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch yesterday, really calling out Republicans for trying to take over our police department and, you know, talking about how things are running with his state-controlled police department in Kansas City. They are still experiencing levels of high crime. 911 calls aren't being answered, and they cannot move and adjust as quickly as we can because we have a locally controlled police department when things change or when crime trends change. And so it's been very frustrating for the residents of Kansas City. And there's no data that leads anyone to believe that a state-controlled police department in the city of St. Louis would make citizens safer. Since I became mayor in 2021, homicides are down over 40%. Youth-involved shootings are down over 50%, and we've made changes to our emergency response times to increase them by 60%. So we are moving down the right path and progress in our tenets of public safety, which are prevention, intervention, and enforcement. So there's no data that says, and they can't even answer the question of how this is going to make St. Louis safer. And some of the sponsors have said, well, this isn't about crime. Well, if it's not about crime, then what is it about?
Well, that was my next question. What, Mayor Jones, you there, what is it really about? What's the politics behind that? What are they really trying to do?
Well, you know, first off, there are two Black mayors running the largest cities in the state of Missouri. Let's start there because they don't want to talk. They don't want to say the quiet part out loud. I would say that this is the first step in a hostile takeover of my city, because there are a lot of projects on the horizon for St. Louis to really turn the corner and stop our population decline and increase investment. And since I became mayor, we've had over $2 billion in investment all over the city. And there's more to come. So we have a whole host of things on the horizon, and they want to take over our city and make sure that that they're in control. But, you know, over my dead body, it's not going to happen.
Y'all heard it, y'all. The mayor says over her dead body. And it's a trend we're seeing in cities with Black mayors. Let me ask you.
Absolutely.
Do you all still control your airport?
Yes, we do.
Are they looking at that too? Because I'm noticing that's a trend. When you got Black mayors, we want to take over the airport now. Are there some rumblings about that too?
Yes, because we're about to upgrade our airport. We have a $3 billion airport upgrade project on tap, and the airport should be finished in 2031. Kansas City just finished an airport upgrade. You know, the tea leaves are there.
Yeah. You know, that's what they're doing and trying to do in Jackson, Mississippi.
And Atlanta,
all of that. It dawned on me. A few years ago, I was in Atlanta coming through the airport as always. You're always changing planes there. And I saw the Black businesses. I saw it. We know what that airport did. It was the template for what a Black city, a city with a Black political population can do. And it dawned on me, May, I looked at it and said, I wonder how long they're going to let us keep this airport. And then all of a sudden, we got to get the airport. Let's go get Jackson, Mississippi's airport. Nobody ever had any interest in Jackson. Why is that important all of a sudden? Because they want to, you know, get these things and have control of them. And so in that vein, we know what an airport and these other industries and businesses can do. Trump is obviously at war with DEI. Mm-hmm. What does that do to you as a mayor? Are you able to still uphold your city's own mandates for diversity and hiring and contracts, et cetera?
Yes, absolutely. So far we are. But you know, we're only a month into this new administration. So far we have pushed back. And we make sure that those businesses are at the table and are involved in our bidding process.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's important to maintain that. And of course, Mayor Jones, folks, is a part of the Democratic Mayors Association. How is the association doing in terms of organizing and all of you mayors working together to try to, you know, put a firewall up? Because, you know, again, people, you know, there's a lot of national news, but people don't really realize how a lot of this little stuff, just death by a thousand cuts, affects those of us in these cities, individual people. You know, we look at the national news, but we don't realize, wait a minute, this is going to affect me. I didn't realize how this was going to affect me. And then you often, as a mayor, have to bear the weight of that.
Yeah, absolutely. We do bear the weight of it. It is politics at its most super local level. But I would also say that the first line of defense against what's going on at the federal level is going to come down to mayors.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. They want to cut Medicaid. Now, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's more state. But still, that's you on a local level. I mean, I can only imagine how many of your constituents depend on that. They want to cut it by, what, $880 billion and cut SNAP benefits as well.
Right. But they don't realize that they're hurting their own people more than they're hurting African-Americans, because the top demographic that receives SNAP benefits are white people in poverty, not Black people in poverty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're starting to see it with the cuts to DEI. You know, white women are the largest recipients of DEI initiatives. You know, we're about fourth or fifth down the line.
So
now, you know, they're starting to have these moments of like, wait a minute, this isn't what I voted for, but it is.
It is. Well, you know, I remind people what Dr. King said at the Montgomery State Capitol. He said, you know, even if white constituents are starving, if you feed them Jim Crow, they'll use that as nourishment, even when it hurts them. I'm paraphrasing. And that's a heavy thing. Y'all voting for stuff and don't even realize how DEI and these other things affect you. Right. That's something to think about. Well, let me ask you this, though. In terms of your city, are some of your white constituents awakening? Are they with you? Are they standing with their mayor? In terms of real diversity, I mean, you got Black, white, and everybody else. Are they all saying, look, our mayor's going to defend us. We're going to stand with the mayor. We're going to all defend ourselves. What's the vibe?
Well, that is exactly the vibe. I've always enjoyed a multi, a different or a diverse coalition of voters and support. And they are standing with me. Most of my support comes, you know, most of my white support obviously comes from the progressive and democratic wing of the party. And I have been able to be a mayor that has fought for and defended progressive values. Some are a little upset with me because, you know, we can't go all the way to the left. You know, the truth is somewhere in the middle. But, you know, a lot of times some of the things that we advocate for, once we get in these offices, we find out are just not practical and not doable or illegal. So, you know, there are some who are disappointed, but I would say for the most part, when they look at, you know, who's going to fight for them, they know that I'm battle tested and will fight for them.
Now, speaking of women, this was a big deal. If I'm not mistaken, you all had women's reproductive rights on the ballot, right, in Missouri.
Yes, we did. We won
that. And so it's my understanding that there's still a little bit of a delay in the force. So they're going to do this like Brown versus Board. We got it. And then they're not going to apply with all deliberate speed. Is that what's going on?
That's exactly what's going on. We are in a legal battle right now. And they're also introducing legislation to try to roll it back. And try to put it back on the ballot, put another question on the ballot. You know, Missouri enjoys really liberal access to the ballot to change things through ballot initiatives when we can't depend on the legislature to do so. And they're even trying to change that and have failed several times to try to change our access to the ballot. Because even local control of our police department, that was gained through a ballot referendum, through a ballot initiative.
Really?
Yes. And so the Missouri Republican Party, including the governor, are literally rolling back and taking away the rights of people who voted for it. Overwhelmingly, 60% of Missourians voted to give control of our police department back to the city of St. Louis.
And see, frankly, Mayor Jones, some of us argued because of what Missouri and other states did, like that, women and everyone voting. After Roe, I mean, it was just this groundswell. We just knew. I mean, as a matter of fact, there before November, there was not an election that Democrats really lost since the reversal of Roe because of that backlash. So we just knew we had November in the bag. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know what happened. I'm not getting all that because I don't want to get you in no trouble. I have my own theories.
Me too.
The math ain't mathing, you know. So hey, but that's a whole nother show. You probably like me. We probably think quite alike. But I'm here. I hear from folks who don't even think like we think. Call me the next morning. Say, Mark, this ain't right. This don't make no
right. That makes sense.
It don't make sense. So, but that's the point, y'all. I mean, Missouri is red.
It's bright red.
Right, which means you had to have had women who were Republican still voting for their bodily autonomy. Mm-hmm. Right? And now you want to tell us, well, yeah, we want our bodily autonomy, but we also going to vote for the man who took it away. I don't.
That make sense.
Yeah.
Right.
If y'all did that, then we need, you know, mass clinical examination or, you know, in terms of our minds. But if y'all didn't do that, then what happened? So, yeah, that's very interesting. And that's why when we look at these states, that's very, very important. Well, tell us a little bit about you. You're an HBCU grad. You went to Hampton, didn't you?
Yes. Hampton University at my home by the sea.
I went to the real HU.
Oh, so you went to Hampton too?
That's good, man. The mayor's sharp. You see what she did there? The mayor's sharp. I like that. That's cool. I appreciate that. So, and you've had a career in politics. You were in the state house yourself, weren't you?
Yes, I was for 4 years, and I was also the first Black woman to be selected as a assistant minority floor leader by my colleagues.
Wow. So you've been doing this for a minute. And what made you decide to become mayor, run for mayor? Because, again, a lot of times, you know, some folk don't want to do that anymore because, I mean, bless her heart. I know Karen. They're trying to blame Karen for the fire. I mean, it is hard. Yeah. Being a mayor, I tell you a funny story. I got my political career began in Washington for 25 years, and I was a protege of Marion Barry's, and that generation, the first generation of great Black mayors, you know, Black power mayors,
and Maynard Jackson,
all of them, right. And so when Marion had his troubles, the Washington Post tried to draft Jesse Jackson to run for mayor of D.C. And I never forget what Reverend Jackson said. He said he wasn't going to do it because Marion was his friend. He would never run against Marion. But he also said to me, he says, you know what, Mark? I said, what, Reverend Jackson? He said, Mark, I don't do potholes. Right? Which was sobering. Because, I mean, really, you know, folks in Washington can, you know, be in lofty places. But if it's a pothole, you're going to get a phone call. You got to fix that pothole. I mean, it's really what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it's about. It is government at its most local level, because you hear all of the things that affect people's day-to-day lives, whether it's potholes, whether even if you're not responsible for the schools and if the schools are challenging, you hear about that. And I'm not responsible for the schools. Very few mayors have that responsibility. You know, and St. Louis, you know, we have a pretty siloed government, even though we have a CEO form of government. I still have 8 other citywide elected officials to deal with. And they, it's like having 8 vice mayors of different departments. And so, you know, I'm not directly responsible for them, but I try to make sure that I have an open door policy and we meet monthly to discuss what their challenges are and how my administration can help them. But yeah, it is politics at its best and sometimes at its worst. You know, you can't go to the grocery store anymore without somebody pulling you aside to say, hey, you know, what about this? What about that? But I signed up for it. I feel like God called me to do this work.
Really? Okay.
Because it is definitely a calling. This isn't something that I chose. It chose me. I was fine in private industry. And my father was also in politics. And so I saw it, you know, growing up and I was like, Lord, I don't think that's for me. But my mother, God rest her soul, always used to tell me that the quickest way to make God laugh is to tell him your plan. And so I told the Lord that that was not my plan. And he was like, you know what? I got something for you.
That's how it happens. You know, I remind folks, even in ministry, I said marrying, but to minister is a verb and it means serve. And all you have to look in most other countries, they call people in the cabinet ministers because they're serving. So yeah, it certainly is a ministry. Let's acknowledge your dad. Your dad was the former city comptroller, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, he was. He was the second African-American to serve in that position.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what does it mean to follow in his footsteps and to follow in the footsteps of all the great Black mayors we've had that have, you know, really been there to minister and serve and try to make a difference?
It's an honor. It's an honor to be able to serve here in the same halls that my father once walked in. He was also an alderman too and assessor before he became comptroller. And so I sometimes see little snippets of things that he was able to do when he served in those positions. But it is an honor to do this and to do this while my father is still very much alive. So, you know, I'm able to call him and get his perspective. Right. On different things and different decisions. He is, you know, the smartest man that I know and always knows what happened, you know, way back when we're faced with decisions. So I use that in my decision making and then, you know, try to have some historical perspective as I try to move forward.
That's called, I believe, institutional memory.
Amen. Yeah. Amen.
So, and it is a blessing to have that. God called you, but God didn't abandon you. So you got your dad right there to help you. Mm-hmm. So now this is your first term.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. So when is re-election?
March 4th. We have what's called approval voting, which is similar to ranked choice voting. There are 4 opponents on the ballot, 4 people on the ballot, including me. And you can vote for every person that you approve of or that you like on the first round. And then the top 2 vote getters then go on to a runoff on April 8th.
Okay. So you good?
You know, I'm confident that we'll get through the primary, but the runoff is going to be tough. I'm running against the same woman I ran against before, and she's got big, wealthy millionaire developers in her pocket. And I'm not the one to be bought or bossed around. So, you know, I don't have those kind of 6-figure checks that have been donated to my PAC. I'm supported by the people and I'm supported by unions.
Okay. Well, that's important that you are supported by the people. Now that you mentioned developers, last thing, let me guess, big money developers are also probably affecting the ability of your citizenry to get and maintain affordable housing. Is that what's going on?
Actually, no. We are building affordable housing. What they are concerned about is, again, this airport project, this $3 billion airport project that's coming up. And we have an $800 million expansion of public transit that's also on tap. So they are, you know, they're looking at those projects with dollar signs. And so they want someone in the office that they're going to be able to control. And the biggest donor to my opponent's campaign is upset and has said this publicly that that we wouldn't let him build an air polluting cement plant next to a Black neighborhood. I'm not going to let that happen. And because we turned down his proposal, which didn't meet the requirements of the RFP, he is using his money to support support my opponent. And essentially trying to buy the mayor's office, just like Elon Musk bought the White House.
See, you said it before I did. That was my next thing I was going to say. Yeah. Where have we seen this movie before? That's right. Precisely what's going on. Yeah. And I guess, mm-hmm. I guess that's going to become more and more the template now that people are just bold to come right out with it. I'm buying this office and I'm the one running it. Yeah. Right. No, St. Right. Louis, y'all can do that. So I'm going to make my endorsement right now. We just meeting for the first time. I'm endorsing Mayor Tashara O. Jones for re-election in St. Louis. Everybody, call everybody you know in St. Louis, everybody. March 4th, that's approval voting. And support her. Let's keep this going. We can't go back. And she's doing a great job for the people of St. Louis. And you see how well she represents herself. Folks make a good first impression. She certainly does. Your campaign, you need some money?
Yeah, absolutely. We can always
use money. Tell people where to go to send you some money.
They can go to my website at Tashara, the number 4, mayor.com. That's Tishaura, the number 4, mayor, mayor.com.
All right. So folks, we want you to go there. Tashara4mayor.com. Do I have it right?
Yes.
The number 4?
Okay. Yes.
I'm going to just put that up on the screen. Is that right? Do I have it right?
That's perfect.
You see, I don't waste time and play around here. This is about business. we want people to leave here. This isn't talk radio. This is do radio. We want people to leave here with an assignment. Tashara4mayor.com. Find out all about her campaign, the great work she's doing for the people of St. Louis, in the tradition of her father and other great Black elected officials that we know that city has had and that we've had around the country. And again, as she has said, you know, really the last line of defense and really the first line of offense, because our mayors are right there. Right. And this is going to be a wild 4 years, y'all. We just 30 days in, Lord have mercy.
Right.
And I don't know. And so we'll go for it. And lastly, we lost our sister, Joy Reid. I want to give you an opportunity to share your thoughts about that, if you would.
Joy Reid is one of the most prolific voices that we have right now in broadcast journalism. She has been able to effectively break down all of the things that have been happening in our country, even most recently. I have been a huge fan of Joy for the longest time and I've been an avid follower of hers. And plus, she's a soror of mine. So I'm a member of Delta Sigma Theta, and so is Joy. So our membership has come out collectively to let Joy know how much we support her. And I hope that this is an opportunity for her to branch out and do her own thing. You know, we can't always rely on mainstream media to carry our message. We have to control the narrative. And we've seen that with Brother Roland Martin, is how he had to start his own platform after being let go by mainstream media. And I think that this is the perfect opportunity for Joy to do the same.
Amen. Tashara for Mayor, the number 4, Tashara4mayor.com. Mayor Tashara O. Jones, our very special guest, the mayor of St. Louis. We're always here for you. Please keep us posted on all you're doing, and we want to be as supportive as we can of you and the people of St. Louis, okay?
Yes, thank you, Reverend Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.